Good morning, Assembly. My name is Brooke Rothschenk, and I've been invited to talk about small art this week. I'm coming to you from my home studio that I share with my husband, Justin. It was not long after we moved back to Goshen 11 years ago when I received an email request from Assembly asking if I would like to share during the summer storytelling. If I remember correctly, I responded by thanking them for considering me, but assuring them that I would never want to share during summer storytelling. To be fair, I grew up at College Mennonite Church, where this type of request was not at all familiar. More importantly, public speaking is not my favorite thing. Unfortunately, being able to talk about what you make as an artist is pretty important. It's what allows for understanding and a more meaningful connection with the audience. And it pushes me to articulate my ideas differently instead of relying on visual interpretations. As many of you probably know, I'm a painter and have spent the past 20 years painting primarily in miniature. Most of my paintings fit inside a 2-inch circle. When my mentee, Sophia Yorty, who is on the summer worship team, told me that the summer theme was small things, I knew what was coming next. She asked if I would be willing to speak about the theme of small art and the 1 Kings 19:12 passage about the still small voice. At the time, Sophia was involved in the baptism class, and we had shared a conversation just the week before about the value of sharing in front of the congregation and of making oneself vulnerable in a trusted community. If there was ever a time when I would not be able to come up with a good reason to say no, having my mentee request I share during a quarantine, when I don't have to actually stand in front of you and I have nowhere else to be, this was it. I agreed. If this was a Marco Polo message, I would encourage you to listen to it on 2x speed, but it's not. And here we are. It only took 11 years. So, small things. My mom has always had an amazing eye for details and tiny treasures. She taught me to delight in the small things like even stitches in a handmade piece of clothing, the brush strokes in a painting, or the garnishes for a meal, the things that make them extra special. When I was 5, my parents gave me a charm bracelet with a single charm on it. Over the years, I would receive charms like a working mousetrap, a sewing machine with a needle that moves up and down, and a 1/2-inch high church with a tiny window that magnifies the Lord's Prayer, among others. My love for miniatures was certainly honed with that bracelet. Leah Redmond, who created the world's smallest postal service, says, "Tiny things are one of those magical phenomena that are difficult to explain. Many people love them for different reasons. Cute, delightful, strange, humorous. I think that anything that is out of normal scale, be it larger or smaller than real life, calls attention to itself and invites us to see the thing in a new way. A normal thing is no longer normal. You shrink it, and suddenly it's special." Leah's words remind me how the still small voice of God speaking to Elijah is similar to when my kids are making so much noise that the only thing they will notice is when I begin to whisper. The normal thing, shouting, is completely ignored. But a whisper, something smaller than usual, calls attention to itself. It's noticed because its smallness is unexpected. In 2004, I decided to complete a daily painting of one image not larger than 1 by 1 inch each day for a year. I was not sure how to spend my limited studio time then, and I didn't want to waste it by spinning my wheels. So committing to a daily practice took away the guesswork. Doing something small meant I would have the satisfaction of completing something each day. It was very low stakes and felt doable to me as a parent of 2 young kids. This daily painting project, more than 365 consecutive days of small works, unexpectedly became part of my creative identity and has continued to permeate and influence how I live and think about creativity. I love how the compilation of small, simple, seemingly insignificant steps in a project can yield complex and lasting results. There's comfort for me in trusting that these individual small parts will add up to something whole. It means letting the future reveal itself bit by bit. Relief that I can rest in an undetermined path, and also hope that this small practice is nurturing something larger, strengthens unseen muscles that will be needed for the future. I once again feel a deep need for a structured daily routine, something like the daily painting that helps me to organize my days. With summer plans canceled because of the pandemic, completely free summer days stretch out in front of me and my family. Depending on the day, this can feel overwhelming. So I initiated a small morning ritual. We gather each day as a family for a short meditation. Recently, we are reading from Thich Nhat Hanh's book, How to Fight. Then we leave for a 10 to 15 minute walk in the woods behind our house. This is a throwback to a favorite childhood activity with my dad, when we would walk through the woods looking for all the tiny spring flowers like anemones, spring beauties, and hepatica. Spring in the woods is delightful, but as mosquitoes and ticks, also small things with a big impact, began to appear, and it's clear they do not practice social distancing, we decided it was time to readjust and maybe try some less structured outdoor time in the more immediate yard instead of our walks. After a day or two of everyone scattered in the yard doing their own thing, it was apparent that the routine of our coming together and walking was good for us. We're now doing this walk, rain or shine, bugs or rashes. Skipping this one small part of the day had a big impact on our connection as a family. There's comfort in knowing that we can count on this intentional time together, relief in the familiar rhythm. There's nothing dramatic or spectacular about these walks, but I would say they have become one of the best byproducts of quarantine life for me. Even with so much extra togetherness because of staying home, this togetherness feels different, uncomplicated, a place for conversation that would otherwise not happen. It's a collaboration in family peace building. Certainly a time when I feel more open to hearing that still small voice. Collaboration has become a go-to tool for Justin and me to ground ourselves. In 2019, we spent a full year creating artworks focused on setting a weekly intention. Each week, we talked about and focused on a theme to help address the challenges that come to us in our roles as partners, caregivers, and global citizens. It was an effort to connect more directly with each other and a national neighborhood on topics that construct beauty and build peace. At the beginning of each week, we chose a single word. It was meant to be a touchstone, a way for us to slow down and make space for an inner voice during hectic schedules where it felt as if there was little time for reflection. I illustrated the word following loosely in the tradition of the fracture. Justin created a ceramic jug, and the fracture was used to decorate the jug, applied as a ceramic decal, carrying the emblem of the week's shared intention. We spent 2019 making these intentional works together, and we're spending 2020 sharing the handmade vessels with our national community. We're sending them to people across the country, highlighting our process of setting an intention and encouraging shared dialogue, the next collaborative step. There are 52 jugs and drawings, one for each week of the year and for each of the 50 states, Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. These vessels are meant to be gifts that initiate a conversation. We've asked in return for personal stories in response to the chosen word on each vessel that we've gifted. Our hope is that the recipients will engage in an intentional experience with the vessel, themselves, or others. The art we made together was relatively small. The time we spent on each piece was relatively brief. As we distribute these individual works, we're finding that really what we are giving people is a reason to pause and reflect. We're hearing primarily from people who have been nominated to participate, and mostly these are people we have never met. It's a humbling experience to have strangers agree to do this. A collaboration is in and of itself a vulnerable experience. You're offering what you have to be altered by someone else to create a new third thing. There is, of course, the possibility of rejection or disappointment, But despite this risk, there's never been a more relevant time to reach out to the stranger in our lives and seek collaboration among ourselves. The way people are engaging with this work is different than we originally imagined. When we started our intention project, we didn't expect a global pandemic or the uprising against the deep social injustice that has been percolating in our country. These shared stories and firsthand accounts we're now receiving have helped us to feel human and connected to a greater good in humanity, something that feels slippery when we spend too much time scrolling articles and the news online. 1 year ago, in our intention journal for the 24th week of 2019, we chose the word forgiveness. Here's part of what we recorded. Why is forgiveness so hard? Why is it so difficult to let go of hurts that are so painful? Why hold on so relentlessly to something that feels so horrible and cannot be undone? Maybe it feels like a responsibility to be emotionally vigilant and prevent a similar hurt. Maybe it's better to move through life more open to not just the possibility, but the reality of being hurt, without carrying the extra burden of trying to prevent often unavoidable difficulty. How do we allow ourselves to accept painful experiences as part of ourselves without allowing them to claim our entire identity? In her book, Untamed, Glennon Doyle says, "If you want to get jaded and numb, watch the news. If you want to stay human, read letters. When trying to understand humanity, seek out firsthand accounts." I'd like to share one of the firsthand accounts we have received. What follows are the recipient's words. "My Rothschenk sharing intention jug arrived mid-April, and as soon as I saw the box, I dashed up our driveway and pulled it inside. I had pondered which word I would receive since I was selected, and the anticipation was maddening. Surely the stars would align, and I would have a word with which I would immediately connect. I started unraveling the packing paper to reveal forgiveness. Really? This was not a word I was expecting, and one that I knew would be extraordinarily challenging for me. Thus, I sat the jug on a shelf for the next several weeks while I pondered, okay, agonized, what to do with it. For me, forgiveness means acknowledging I've been hurt or wrong, and acknowledging I've been hurt or made a mistake shows vulnerability, and vulnerability shows weakness. Even typing that sentence makes me physically uncomfortable. And while I theoretically know that what I just typed is not true, intentionally facing actions that need forgiveness is not an easy practice. As I thought about forgiveness, several names came to mind with memories that carried hurt, some from long ago, some more recent. Some people I have never met, but heard about on the news. Like Justin and Brooke wrote in their journal entry, why is it so hard to let go of our hurts? Now we've passed the beginning of May, and still the jug sits on my shelf by my own worry about what will happen if I confront these past hurts. Growing up, forgiveness was simplified into an I'm sorry and an I forgive you, a ritual that took two or more people to initiate the apology and to accept. But of course, we know that forgiveness is much more than an exchange of words. To make use of my sharing intention jug, I set out to face the names that came to my mind. For each name, I set an intention during my weekly run, meditating on the hurt I've experienced and how I can truly forgive. When I returned, I used the forgiveness jug to rehydrate. Some names need more than one run. Some runs felt silly. Occasionally, I thought about hurt from 10 or more years ago and realized it was time to move on and to reopen space for those relationships to heal. However, some runs were different. The last run I did was on May 28. This week, I felt as though I had been overwhelmed with the news that shed light on the most horrifying and evil parts of the world. On my run, I listened to a podcast about George Floyd and considered forgiveness in terms of my privilege, creating space for raw conversation and fighting injustice. I returned home, sat on my porch, and looked across the street at my neighbors who had hung a handmade Black Lives Matter sign in their yard. I didn't know I could be so moved by a piece of white poster board and a Sharpie, but here I was, on my porch, holding the forgiveness jug, forced to reconcile with the injustice around me and what I can do to be better. I imagine that the forgiveness jug will be in constant use in my home, a solid reminder to remain compassionate towards others and myself in wrongdoing. To intentionally live with the goal of forgiveness to me means intentionally living with the goal of showing love, practicing compassion, and creating a space for a more open and just tomorrow. Those words were from Mary Bell of Alabama. The unknowns in our country and current day-to-day lives can feel overwhelming. I feel as if I am constantly refocusing, searching for gratitude, setting new goals, and trying to remember what sparks joy, even as the news feels increasingly heavy and complicated. I'm striving to redirect my attention to what is manageable in small doses. I'm trying to stay in the moment, this tiny amount of time right now, looking for the details and tiny treasures that I can share.